Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We're going to talk about what it takes to protect the country we love, particularly here inside the United States, with a man who has devoted much of his professional life to doing just that. Initially, he was a force reconnaissance Marine and deployed into combat in Desert Storm. He has been an FBI special agent, including one who specialized in counterterrorism and trained FBI colleagues in how to recognize that enemy. Since he left the Bureau, he has been actively involved in the fight in the private sector, notably as the founder of a marvelous organization. It's called Understanding the Threat. John Guandolo does, and when he speaks about it, people should listen. We're delighted to have him here to do just that. He's the author of Raising a Jihadi Generation, and we're very anxious to talk with him about how we are doing that and the implications of it, among many other aspects of the problem I think of as the enemy within. John Guandolo, thank you for joining us, and thank you for giving us generously of your time today.
Thanks for having me, as always, Frank.
You participated in a very important webinar that we did recently of the Committee on the Present Danger China series on the Chinese Communist Party's unrestricted warfare against us. The focus of that conversation was the evidence that is accumulating that the Chinese are using our open border and the policies of the Biden administration to insinuate significant numbers of military-aged, unaccompanied young men who one of our colleagues, Michael Yan, has described as all packing essentially the same kit, backpacks and canteens and the like, and moving in organized groups, it appears. And he has said to our colleague and friend, Sam Faddis, this looks like some kind of organized effort and of a military character. Talk about that a little bit, John, as an introduction to the distinct possibility that all of this, you know, migration, as they call it, or invasion, more accurately, whether it's the Chinese or the Venezuelans or jihadis from around the world, could constitute a totally different kind of internal security problem than we've ever faced, arguably, at least in modern times.
Well, I think that your assessment from what you've just said is on the mark. From my assessment, it's the timing, as I shared on the webinar, the timing of this with other threats and threat indicators lining up. That to me is significant, that it's in the last 3 to 4 months that we've seen 900 to 1,000% increase on Chinese nationals coming over. And from my study of looking at video, photographs and interviews of these people, they are all healthy males. I've seen a couple females, but most of them are healthy males and what I would call military age, so from 25 to 45. And that's absolutely true. What is interesting to me, that is a big indicator, is when interviewed, they all give a very similar story about how they came to do what they do, how they ended up where they are. And when they describe it, it's a very rugged trip to get from China to the United States. And when you look at these guys, they don't look gaunt, they don't look exhausted, they look fit. And so somebody that makes a journey, as they describe in their own words, and looks bright and healthy and fine, is somebody who's trained to do what they just described. So yeah, it's not just that the way they're traveling and the kit they're carrying, it's the way they're describing what they've done in a It's like I would do it, or one of my recon colleagues would talk about it. So it does raise for me the reality that these are trained individuals, or at least some of them are.
Yeah. You know, I was listening to a podcast of one of our friends, Daniel Horowitz, that he's just done with another of our friends and colleagues, Joseph Humeyer, who's another Marine veteran who has specialized really in Latin America. He's with the Center for a Secure Free Society. And what Joseph recounted, based on his study of what's happening, much as you have, John, is that the Chinese, the Venezuelans, the Nicaraguans, now Colombians, are taking advantage of this opportunity to insinuate people in this country that we may not want here, and specifically raising a question of whether what is in the offing is an insurgency once they are inside this country. And I know you've not only studied this, you know, in the understanding the threat part of your career, but you actually had to work these problems as an FBI agent. Do you consider that to be a distinct possibility, especially if at the same moment we're looking at the Chinese telling us war is in the offing?
I don't think it's a possibility. I think it is what's happening. And I think there's sufficient evidence to demonstrate that. You just said it. You know, part of the way I analyze the threats and the status of where they are and what they're trying to do is you have to begin with just listening to them and reading their doctrine. It's one of the things we did, you know, on the webinar is if you read Unrestricted Warfare, if you look at the communist doctrine, if you look at how they do what they do, and just look at Mao's political warfare model, they're doing it. They're doing it right now. I don't think they're coming in to set up an insurgency. I think they are working with already established networks inside the country, just like the jihadis are doing. The jihadis that are coming into the country now already have a massive network to work with that's already existing. And we know that the communists and jihadis are working seamlessly at the local level and small towns and large cities around the United States. And I think they're doing what they said they want to do. And to be clear, I would put a fine point on the fact that they have not been, they're not taking advantage as much as I think they're being given an open door and by this administration. So it's intentional.
I want to come back to that, John, but before we do, one of the things that I value so much about your mastery of this subject is your deep understanding of how it is that groups or ideologies, if you wish, that seem to be antithetical with one another, nonetheless can make common cause. Of course, in the course of the efforts to understand what we were up against, such as it was, about the various enemies we were confronting in places like Afghanistan and elsewhere in the Middle East, the Shia and the Sunnis, we were told, couldn't possibly collaborate with one another because they had these profound theological differences. Similarly, I think it's fair to say that many people assume that a Chinese communist regime that is murdering genocidally Uyghur Muslims couldn't possibly be making common cause with Muslim Brotherhood or Iranian Hezbollah or other groups that are imbued with, you know, the same Sharia philosophy that most Uyghurs have. So we're going to have to pause for just a second. We'll be right back to have you explore that with us. John Guandola is in the house. Stay tuned. Be right back.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A growing number of Americans, including a spirited group of patriots, collaborating under the brand of our Sovereignty Coalition, have exposed a stealthy effort to impose so-called global governance here and elsewhere. A Capitol Hill press conference this afternoon, led by Congressman Ralph Norman, will oppose the bid by a deeply problematic and wholly unaccountable World Health Organization to dictate to us public health policy. Yet, a shocking webinar on Monday revealed that this gambit has already begun to metastasize as, quote, One Health, unquote. It would, among other things, confer on the WHO authority to rule over anything, bearing not only on human health but that of animals and plants. In other words, pretty much everything. One Health equals zero America. Join us at SovereigntyCoalition.org in demanding that the United States stop funding and exit from the World Health Organization. This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back. John Guandolo, former special agent in the FBI, now the founder and driving force behind a marvelous group, UnderstandingTheThreat.com, is with us. And John, we've been talking about the phenomenon of enemies within. Their numbers are swelling. They may have insurgency, sabotage, mass destruction in mind inside the United States. And you said something that caught my attention, and I want to make sure we're exploring it with our audience. And that is that at the local level, you said, I think it was the communists, the Marxists, the radical left, I'm not sure exactly how you characterize them, feel free to sort that, are collaborating with the jihadists in our country. And I was just asking you about how could that be? Explain it.
Well, that's an important point. You've got, first of all, we have to understand these adversaries, the communists, and I'm going to focus on the Chinese and the jihadis. They're playing three-dimensional chess. And even people on our side that are trying to do the right things are still playing checkers. And that we have to understand the way they look at warfare, the way they approach it, their perspective is wholly different. It's not even in the same ballpark as the way the West in general, but specifically the United States looks at it. We're very kinetically oriented. We're very traditional military oriented. And they are not at all. And you've talked about this before, and you and I have talked about it. So when we talk about whether we're talking about the communists or the jihadis, they will work with adversaries either for short durations or even longer durations for the purpose of addressing what they consider to be their primary threat, which is the West in general, but really the United States, because they understand the power of the United States and the bedrock that holds up our law and government. They understand why it's different. I would argue our adversaries understand our founding principles better than a lot of our people do.
Right. Well, after all, it's what animates them to want to take us down.
That's right. That's exactly
right. It's a real problem for their program. So, John, finish the thought. Go ahead.
So in the same way as Iran, Shia, can give direct assistance, intelligence, weapons, ammunition to Sunni, Al-Qaeda, and Muslim Brotherhood fighters in a place like Iraq, for instance. And yet, during the same time frame, the Sunni can attack the Iranian embassy in Lebanon. People look at that and go, well, that doesn't make sense. It makes sense in their sphere of understanding warfare. So the communists are the same way. You've got Black Lives Matter and the Chinese Progressive Association, Asian for Black Lives, Chinese communist organizations working directly with the Chinese consulates in the United States Communist Party officials. And they have this network. And on the one hand, they can be killing the Uyghurs because it has to do with their own security in China, and yet work with Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Muslim Brotherhood, and Iran on the other hand. And the answer is, when people ask, how can they do that? The answer is yes, they can do it. And if you don't understand that those things can operate at the same time, I don't think you understand the war we're in.
Big no. John, one of the things that I wanted to double back on was the nature of the war that we're in, especially this unrestricted warfare element that the Chinese Communist Party has been practicing, well, for decades against us. And of course, this is the subject of our new book, The Indictment, to which you have contributed as a participant in our webinar series from which it's drawn. The two People's Liberation Army colonels who wrote a book of that name, Unrestricted Warfare, actually talked about the fact that the West wouldn't recognize that they were waging war through other means because it didn't have that kinetic dimension. We were so focused on that as how wars are fought. Again, you've studied these guys closely. You have specialized, I think it's fair to say, in not only understanding the threat, but thinking through how you counter it. How fundamental a problem is it that for most of this period, I would argue up to the present moment, the vast majority of us, including the United States military, by the way, have not understood that this three-dimensional chess involves warfare in the economic space and in the political subversion arena and information operations and even biological warfare, for that matter?
So I think it's tremendous. My opinion, my professional opinion, is I don't think there are five people in the Pentagon that have a grasp on this, based on my experiences and the experiences of my colleagues. I go back to the chess, the three-dimensional chess checkers comparison, because I think it's real. I think they are very serious about achieving their goals. Our military is more worried about paying for men to become women and making sure that everyone's comfortable instead of training for war. And for which, by the way, I think our general officer corps is criminally negligent. But it's across the board. And I think it also reveals two other significant facts, or from my perspective, their realities, that number one, there is no serious understanding at all or attempt to understand these threats in the government. There are individuals and pockets that I work with, actually, that are scared to death about what's going on, both inside the Pentagon and the broader DOD and the intelligence community, but it's not the majority view. It's a very immature leadership and a very immature approach to these enemies. But it's also because of the work of the enemies, there are a lot of their operatives inside our decision-making process. And that's catastrophic, which goes to the last problem that I truly believe. There is no functional counterintelligence capability in the U.S. government right now. And you put those things together, and it just creates a very dangerous situation that is just, it's getting worse by the month.
Yeah. John, this is a point to which I want to return with you. Several of the things you've just said, but before we do, we've got a break in about a minute and a half. When you look at this, and again, you have the perspective of somebody, I remember when we first met, you were raising the alarm inside the FBI about the jihadist threat here not being understood and the degree to which the Muslim Brotherhood in particular was building out infrastructure and running influence operations and, well, subverting our government, mostly without anybody even noticing it, including the counterintelligence personnel of that day. This is 20 years ago, I guess, now. Beyond that, you went on to do some training inside the Pentagon, as I recall, trying to, again, imbue people with an appreciation of who we were fighting, what was animating them, and what it was going to take to defeat them. Because it wasn't just military tactics or you know, even counterinsurgency. This was spiritual warfare, among other things. It sounds as though things have not materially improved, to say the least, since those days. And then, in fact, what we're witnessing is really, with the addition of the Chinese Communist Party, very palpably now in the mix, that penetration, that subversion, those influence operations, those elite captures that, you know, we kind of saw in a microcosmic way, maybe, are now metastasizing. I've run up the time. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more with John Guandolo, United States Marine Corps retired, a man who has served with great distinction in uniform as well in the private sector these days at Understanding the Threat. Stay tuned for much more right after this.
Night in cities across the country, black-garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and we're speaking with John Guandolo, a personal friend and mentor and hero, frankly, for me, and I'm grateful to him anytime we get a chance to spend a bit of, visitation, shall we say, for the purpose of consulting on the true nature of the challenges we're facing, particularly here inside the United States. He's the founder and the president, I believe, of Understanding the Threat. You can find out all about it at understandingthethreat.com. It is an invaluable resource, particularly to those in the front lines, law enforcement personnel, people in local communities and government who have to contend with the kind of willful blindness at best that we've been discussing at the federal level and sometimes state as well. And John, I just wanted to ask you about that proposition that you've recognized the enemy within phenomenon for many, many years. You've raised an alarm about it consistently. You've taught people to recognize it. Is it worse today, would you say, that counterintelligence functional failure, as you've described it, worse today than when you were first raising that alarm back in the days when you were in the Bureau?
I would say yes. It's significantly worse for a couple simple reasons. The biggest is the inertia of the hostile movements and the control of the narratives of how we understand each of these problems. And the inertia, what I mean by that is people are much less willing in some ways to come forward or push back now because they, you know, there's just a steamroller ready to roll over them. On the other hand,
steamroller in the sense of suppressing criticism or expressions of concerns about it.
Correct. Right. Now we do have, you know, people are kind of being pushed to the edge. And so some of them are, we just had at the end of this week, a group of FBI agents come forward and talk about the real nature of what's going on inside the FBI. And that's positive, but it's not shocking because what they're saying is nothing new. It's something that everyone can see plain as day, but 5 years ago, nobody came forward. 8 years ago, nobody came forward. And that's therein lies the issue. So it's the inertia and the control, and I mean real control, that the communists and the jihadis have inside the government, that they are exclusively the key influencers and leaders inside the government. And we at Understanding the Threat, as you know, have demonstrated individuals who are leaders or operatives from ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, Hamas, who are in the government or who have been in positions of real influence. It's astonishing. And it's the same for the communist movement. You know, we've got a Secretary of the Interior who's a communist. You've got key people of influence inside the cabinet, inside. I mean, the recent reports done by Trevor Loudon about the number, which a couple of years ago, we were looking at, 65 to 70 members of the House of Representatives who are either communist or in their camp, even if they're not card-carrying members. And the number's now close to or over 100. And that's not surprising based on the work and the momentum. So I think inside the system, it's pretty devastating. And that's why the work that we do, you mentioned the word insurgency, and a counterinsurgency, the focus has to be the local level. And that's where we are finding the most productive work and the most exciting action being taken by citizens and local governments.
Well, with your counsel and guidance, no question about it. John, just two quick points. Talk about the implications of, as you say, the penetration and the influence of the Chinese Communist Party in the executive branch. And starting with the President of the United States, in recent days, we've been getting more documentation from the House Oversight Committee that Joe Biden has received personally, as well as with his family, over $10 million, some of it from Chinese sources, Chinese intelligence sources, point one. And point two, we had recently the administration holding an Islamophobia awareness event in which, as best I can tell, the exclusive attendants were Muslim Brotherhood jihadis who are either inside the administration itself or certainly influential on it. Just as two examples of that problem that you described.
Yeah. So I actually just wrote on that yesterday. If you just summarize the evidence, and I encourage people, if you haven't read the November 2022 House Oversight Committee report and the one that just came out this week, May 10th, both of which we put links to in the article. But the point is, the evidence is staggering. And this is the largest public corruption matter in American history. And the implications of it are dangerous.
And when you say this, you mean the Biden?
I'm talking about the Biden family that includes Joe Biden at the driving force behind this, based on the facts and the evidence. And I think when people understand it, this is, to be clear, the evidence that's on the table now is a small percentage of the total evidence that exists, but that the Oversight Committee doesn't have yet, or is being stonewalled. And I think it's not a small matter to point out to your audience that Joe Biden himself changed the rules, through executive fiat, the rules on who can actually put their eyeballs on the suspicious activity reports from the Treasury Department. He changed it. And now we know why, because Biden accounts or accounts related to any of the 20 LLCs that we know of right now that involve the Biden family and their associates in this criminal syndicate, which is what it is. This is a large criminal conspiracy. 170 SARs, and I explained to some people yesterday, to have one SAR, one suspicious activity report, is noteworthy. I mean, because you don't have any, I don't have any, nobody I know has any. But the Bidens have 170. It's significant indicator of an ongoing massive fraud, criminal conspiracy, probably espionage, bribery, wire fraud, bank fraud, conspiracy to commit those crimes. This is
racketeering, it seems to me. And John, one of the things that it was striking about that is it's not just those suspicious activity reports, it's the shell companies the bank accounts all over the place that they were moving money around through fraudulent racketeering conspiracies, it seems.
And it's the evidence that the people paying them and they themselves were taking actions to conceal the payments. And that's clear as day. And the fact you've got guys like the Romanian, oligarch, real estate, convicted of real estate fraud, sentenced to 7 years in Romania. And he paid them over a million dollars, them being the Bidens. And then the Chinese.
While Joe was vice president, by the way. Those payments went away once he left, right?
Right. Most of this was as he's vice president. And the Chinese connection, the CEFC, a NGO based in the United States, which was the predicate for the U.S. Department of Justice to indict guys like Patrick Ho, who the FBI was looking at for being a Chinese spy and monitoring his activities. You know, he gets paid $1 million from Hunter Biden to represent him. And that company giving
You mean to say Ho paid Hunter Biden $1 million?
And the relationship between these guys, Ye Jingming, the leader of this company, and Patrick Ho, it is amazing. And the money that was paid to the Bidens and that the Bidens exchanged for services. And what services do we have? Nothing on record except right. Joe Biden's access, influence, and policymaking.
So, John, just a quick point on this. What we now know is that Hunter Biden and presumably the old man, the big guy, Joe Biden himself, knew they were dealing not just with Chinese, not just with a Chinese political influence operation. They were dealing with Chinese intelligence.
Yes.
And that makes this a whole different level.
And they knew it.
I think betrayal. They knew it, right. John, quickly on the Islamophobia awareness front, what's up with that?
So I think it's for your viewers, it's important to remind people or inform them that the term Islamophobia and it is more than just a word. It's an entire effort. It's a line of operation by the Islamic movement, and it is to impose the Islamic law of slander on non-Muslims, on the non-Muslim community. And the Islamic law of slander is normative Islamic law that states you cannot write or say anything about Islam that Muslims would dislike. That's the legal language. So it doesn't matter whether it's verifiably true or not. That's the legal language. And the punishment is death. So it's a capital crime. And they are using, and the White House, the U.S. government, is officially channeling this unofficial law onto the American people through this process.
Right, including by creating a new envoy to promote this whole idea that there is Islamophobia
right.
and that we have to be steeled against it. John, we're going to take another break. We'll be right back with more with the great John Guandola, former special agent in the FBI, now with understandingthethreat.com.
This is Frank Effney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A growing number of Americans, including a spirited group of patriots, collaborating under the brand of our Sovereignty Coalition, have exposed a stealthy effort to impose so-called global governance here and elsewhere. A Capitol Hill press conference this afternoon, led by Congressman Ralph Norman, will oppose the bid by a deeply problematic and wholly unaccountable World Health Organization to dictate to us public health policy. Yet, a shocking webinar on Monday revealed that this gambit has already begun to metastasize as, quote, One Health, unquote. It would, among other things, confer on the WHO authority to rule over anything, bearing not only on human health but that of animals and plants. In other words, pretty much everything. One Health equals zero America. Join us at SovereigntyCoalition.org in demanding that the United States stop funding and exit from the World Health Organization. This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back. John Guandolo is in the house virtually. We're very pleased to have him as always. We have been covering a multitude of really troubling developments and activities inside our country that raise in the mind of a skilled Homeland Security professional, former special agent in the FBI, for that matter, real concerns about the possibility of insurgency, among other things, inside America. And John, I just wanted to ask you about this Islamophobia business, because you have worked tirelessly to counter the, I call it, Sharia supremacists in our midst. They have accused you, as well as, well, for that matter, me, and many others of our colleagues who've assiduously tried to document the facts and explain them. We've all been branded as Islamophobes, haters, bigots, and so on. And you're talking about that as an operation designed to suppress opposition to what they're trying to do, which is what, John, inside our country? What with respect to their ultimate agenda?
Well, they state very unequivocally that their objective is to overthrow the U.S. government, replace it with an Islamic state under which Allah's divine law, which is Sharia, is imposed on every human being in the United States. That's their objective. That's what they're working to. And the current administration is taking proactive actions to advance that, which is nothing short of treasonous and talk about insurrection.
Right. Well, especially given the infrastructure that, as you've documented at Understanding the Threat, that they've built out in this country for the purpose. John, I think you said on the webinar the other day that one of the things that's going on at the moment, speaking about intensifying the threat, is a government, U.S. government program to help make mosques in America more dangerous. Talk about the role of mosques historically in Islam, but what's being done at the moment to that end?
Okay, so the masjid, the Islamic center, the mosque, all the same thing. The role is to be an outpost for the Islamic State. So if we think of it more as a, in that terms, as a mix between a town hall, an embassy, and a military base, then that's really what you're looking at. Because the primary role of a mosque is not to be a place to worship. That's the key. The primary role, according to Islam, is not to be a place of worship, but is to be a place from which Sharia is adjudicated. And again, it's a place to expand the Islamic State. So that's the short version of that.
I've also heard it's been historically a repository of weapons and military training, and as you say, power projection in effect for the state. Is that right? And is that something that happened in ancient times, but today really all of these mosques, these Islamic centers, as they're called by the Muslim Brotherhood, are really just houses of worship comparable to our mosques, our churches?
Well, they're not at all comparable to churches. So I'll accentuate the point. The mosque is the place where jihad is planned, war is planned, and It's a place from which war is launched. So yes, and therefore weapons training and weapons and ammo storage and food and water storage is a part and parcel of what a mosque is. And when you ask our combat veterans, hey, of the mosques in Afghanistan and Iraq that you went by, how many fired upon you? And the answer is, with everybody I've spoken with, the answer is all of them, because that's what they are. We look in Europe. This is not something that just happened in the past. We look in Europe, in Germany and France, 100% of the mosques that the security services have raided have had military grade weapons in them. We have in the United States mosques that we know from testimony in terrorism trials that sources have said, I have participated in weapons training inside the mosque, because that's what they are. And when we have, in fact, raided mosques to effect arrests, there have been gunfights. And so what do we in the United States, Detroit, Imam Haq, when they went to arrest him, there was a gun battle that took place. And the source in that case, another example, said, and it was part of the affidavit for the warrants, you know, I participated in weapons training inside the mosque.
So, all right. So, John, bring us up to date on this. Is the United States government doing something that might make those mosques even more dangerous?
Yes. So we reported on this a number of months ago that the Department of Homeland Security and FEMA are actually coordinating at senior levels. And they had a webinar with Muslim Brotherhood leaders in the United States to discuss how to make it easy for them to get grant money that was to be used to physically fortify mosques and Islamic organizations. You cannot make this up. This is the U.S. government giving money to organizations that, as a matter of fact, in evidence in the largest terrorism trials, are hostile. And the U.S. government is not only intentionally giving them money, they're showing them how to get it.
John, the reason, as I understand it, is because there have been attacks on, well, religious institutions in this country, including some mosques, you know, defacing them or breaking windows or spray painting things on them, I think is probably the most of it, but maybe some violent attacks of some kind as well. That's the pretext under which this program is being mounted, I assume, right?
It is, and it's good to note that the majority of these reported instances, and this could date back into the 1980s, by the way, from FBI agents that have reported on these incidences, that the majority of these instances are being done by the Muslims themselves in order to advance this narrative, which is complete BS, and in order to get money. And our leaders are so stupid, ignorant, and unprofessional that, or nefarious, I'm giving them
nefarious. Nefarious is one of I want to come back to. John, we have to take a short break. We'll be right back with more. John Quandola, right ahead. John Quandola is with us for this final installment of this hour-long conversation. I couldn't be more pleased to have this kind of time with him, quality time, as they say. I apologize, John, I was a little rushed there at the end because I realized I was so caught up in the narrative about what our government is doing to, well, exacerbate the threat inside the United States from jihadis. And I make the point that not all Muslims are, not all mosque-going Muslims are, but unfortunately, plenty who do embrace this doctrine of Sharia know that it is their duty to Allah, according to Sharia, to engage in, or at least support financially and otherwise, jihad. Jihad in places like this country, which, as you've said, the Muslim Brotherhood intends to destroy. They call it take down our miserable house, as I recall, in one of their famous documents, which I think you had a hand in discovering in a raid, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, John, I wanted to pivot because we've only got 6 or 7 minutes left. You're a Marine veteran. You've worked with in the Pentagon and in the field people who are still serving. One of those who has become rather notorious in the course of the past few years, and you used the term earlier, immature, to describe our military leadership. That is the most generous term that I think I could conjure up. And again, this isn't to impugn the vast majority of people in uniform, even today, let alone what made up the ranks before the purges and the vax mandates and all the rest of it began the fundamental transformation, I call it, of the military. But the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, has become rather notorious, and you have the reasons at hand as well as I, and is now retiring and is, we understand, going to be replaced by someone who, well, I call him Milley 2.0, that could be even worse, if that's possible, than Mark Milley as the top military officer in our uniform service and the one who's directly responsible for advising the president on military matters. Give us your veterans' assessment of the state of the military today, the state of the leadership today. Is it really worse than just immature? And what may be about to befall us, unless, in my hope and expectation, the Senate Armed Services Committee stands up and fights a very ill-advised selection for the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
So I really appreciate the question, and I will get right to the point. You know, when you were engaged in the transition and doing some things back when Mr. Trump was first coming into office, as well as a couple of our colleagues, one of the things I recommended, and I believe very strongly, is Mr. Trump should have fired every general officer in all four branches of the service. And I meant it, and I mean it now. I think they're criminally negligent. I think we have thousands of Americans that died in combat, many of whom died because these general officers decided that over 20 years, they don't actually need to understand the enemy. And they can make decisions about how to deal with the combat in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and elsewhere without actually understanding why Al-Qaeda was fighting, why ISIS is fighting. And that's criminal negligence. It absolutely is. And I think they should be in jail for it, but they certainly shouldn't be getting pensions, and they certainly shouldn't be allowed in leadership positions. And I would say
maintaining their access to classified information, their clearances, that's right. All that too.
I would strip them of all that. We now have former generals that on the outside have been operating against the interests of the law and the people now. And it's disgusting. And it includes people like John Allen and others. All these people that were held in such high esteem and actually decided.
Four-star generals and
four-star generals. I would argue it's bled into the colonel ranks and probably lieutenant colonels. And I think it would be fine if the Marine Corps and the Army and the Navy, you take a major lieutenant colonel and put him in charge because it couldn't be any worse. That is my professional opinion. So I believe there needs to be a real deep house cleaning in the military. And I think it would go a long way to embolden the real patriot men and women that are in the Marines and the Army and the Navy and the Air Force to actually realize that. But I'm not holding my breath. I have no belief that that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, let me just come back to that point at the end, but just a quick question to you, I guess. When people talk about woke in the United States military, is that really a euphemism for a Marxist takedown, a fundamental transformation, as Barack Obama used to say, that is rendering it incapable of providing for the national defense of the United States?
Yes. In a word, yes, absolutely. And I think there's substantial evidence over a long period of time to document that. But I just think, you know, our adversaries, real adversaries, are building their warfighting capabilities up while we in the United States military are pushing a communist line of operation, transgender, LGBTQ plus whatever. That's what we're doing. And that is absolutely the overt takedown of our military and intelligence community.
John, I just want to shamelessly plug this book again, to which you've contributed, The Indictment. Charge 7 of The Indictment is about the takedown of the United States military by the CCP, yes, through its various operations, but also its friends. And John, I'm just going to say in closing, and I have to leave it at this, the idea that we would put in charge of all of the armed forces in the role of commander, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, somebody who, even more than Mark Milley, buys into this woke agenda, this Marxist takedown of our military, is unacceptable. And it must be fought by the Senate Armed Services Committee and senators more generally, so that we don't get Mark Milley 2.0. God bless you, John Guandolo, and the work you do at understandingthethreat.com. Keep it up. Come back to us again soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.